Hey, welcome to The Screenwriting Life. I'm Meg LaFauve.
And I'm Lorianne McKenna.
We are professional screenwriters. We've worked together as a team and separately. We've worked on studio and indie films, live action and animation, from my work on Inside Out and Captain Marvel.
To my work in Pixar's story department on Up, Brave, and Inside Out. We are here to share our insights on the craft of screenwriting and also the life. How to not only survive the ups and downs, but thrive. We want to help you become the best screenwriter you can be and to reassure you that you are not alone on this journey.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Today we're chatting with a top literary manager, TV producer, and my manager, Charlie Gogolak.
After working as an exec for Oliver Stone, Charlie joined the production management company Bender Spink, where he was promoted to president within 3.5 years. In 2011, he co-founded Zoftig Films with John Requa, Glenn Ficarra, and with all three of them serving as EPs on a number of projects, including the Emmy-winning mega hit, This Is Us.
Charlie is joining us to discuss what it means to be a literary manager in Hollywood today, as well as a producer, and how emerging writers should be curating their career to prepare for representation. We got some great questions from our listeners on the Facebook page, and we're really excited to have you here, Charlie. Thank you for coming.
Thank you all for having me. It's a treat.
Welcome. Well,
I think we warned you that we start each podcast with our week. Are you up for this or up for sharing your week?
As long as I don't have to go first.
No, you don't. Lorianne always goes first. Lorianne, how was your week?
It was good. I have a lot of projects going on and I have different roles on all those projects. So lately, and I've been talking about this a lot on the show, I'm really trying to focus on centering on what's important to me while also managing notes and other voices and other people's needs. So I'm writing my own project, two projects. I'm co-writing with somebody else, and then I'm show running another project in development. So each of these requires a sort of different version of me, right? On the projects that are me, I'm trying to really rock back into what's important to me and then listening to notes and hearing them and figuring out what that means and how that fits in with what I'm trying to do. And then, you know, co-writing is a whole other balance and a dance, right? Trying to find the what's important to both of us. And then, you know, showrunning for me on this project is really important to listen to what all the other voices are and what's important to them and to be very collaborative in that process. And so it's you know, you have to click in. We always talk about on the show, like have lots of projects going on, you know, cause you never know which one is gonna boil up, but that sort of clicking in between different projects is a bit of a dance and trying to figure out, you know, is this my project? Is this our project? Is this your project? Right. So trying to figure out all those different roles and being able to bounce elegantly between them. That's really what I've been focusing on this week. And it's my daughter's birthday tomorrow, which is also my husband's birthday. So I've been trying to manage all that. Like I do every year, it sneaks up on me like, oh, wait, it's also my husband's birthday. Damn it. Right. So that's been very much on my mind. And she's going to be 10. So we're very excited. So that's been my week. Charlie, how was your week?
My week was pretty good. You know, as you all now know, I'm sort of manager and producer. And so I had a good array of news on the whole. I had one client who got good news on a project, which their draft was well received. That's always nice to hear as a manager. It's nice when your clients hear those things. You'll know they'll be in a good place artistically and emotionally. So that's always a plus. Had another client who we staffed on a show, really just worked with a showrunner and figuring out the show. But he's very happy to be doing that. Another client who declared he was off the grid. He was in recovery from his television show he used to run. And so he went to Mexico for a month and is not to be bothered. I'm very jealous of that path.
And then you get to do that?
That's a thing.
You can remove yourself. I mean, some opportunities might not come your way, but it's I like that path when you know, anybody, friends or clients or anyone else, make that choice, right? It's good for their mental health and probably artistic health and all those things. And then I am trying to get a new show up and running, and we are sort of getting into crunch time, which is always a little stressful, but fun. We're a few months out. We've kind of been in this cocoon of just working on the creative for a while, but now the production realities are starting to invade. So hiring department heads, and there's a healthy competition for that, and the budget never being quite what you want it to be out of the gates, and figuring out where you're going to live when you have to go somewhere and how your family is going to cope without you. And so that's all happening. And that's that sort of normal stress, but certainly it's a stress. Yeah, but I'll say good stress, because it's better to be working than not be working.
Absolutely. Yes. All right. My week, mostly I'm trying to rest and teach myself to rest while the chopper has backed off a little bit. I find it very hard to rest though. I have been thinking about my passion project and getting back to that, and really kind of stressed, because I have to be stressed, I guess, about, oh, I just don't know what to do with these characters. And I guess I have to do more research in terms of specific characters in the passion project. And I think what I realized is that I was staying too high up. I was too 30,000 foot view and trying to see the whole series and how these supporting characters could have their own storylines in the whole series. And it was too much. It was just too much to figure out. So I was walking home from my coffee shop visit, and all of a sudden I was like, I just decided, okay, I'm going to get really specific. Where is this character? If she was going to open an episode, where is she? And I saw her and I saw what she was looking at, and all of a sudden I knew her problem and I knew suddenly what it could be. So I bring it up in terms of sometimes you just have to let go of all the intellect and worry about what it has to be and should be, and just go down into a scene and see what the character has to tell you. I also want to talk, we've been talking, Charlie, about I Want songs, and how I had everybody on the Facebook page post their favorite I Want song, because I think it's very instructive to especially emerging writers to think about what wants are and how they express themselves in a movie, whether that, you know, whether it's a musical or not. I had a friend who was script I read, and it's not a musical, but I said to him, just what would his I Want song be? And he was like, wow, that is such a good question, because it forced him to think about what would those lyrics be? What would the refrain be of the I Want song, so that you can start to see it? And it was really interesting because, you know, thinking about it more and talking to a friend who's actually doing a musical is sometimes that I Want song isn't about the situation. It's not about the incident. It's about their dilemma within that situation and incident. And there, it's almost often a debate. Like if you think about Moana, I have this need and want to go out past the reef and sail, and yet I have to be the chief's daughter, and that's real too. And how does this longing match up with my life? And then, you know, so she's within a situation, but it's more us listening to her emotional debate about it, so that we understand and how those situations develop to come in and kind of wake up the character. Like I was talking to a producer and he said, well, doesn't the I Want song have to come out of their own agency? And I was like, well, not always. Often it's a dilemma has arrived in the story that's forcing the I Want song up, right? Like it's time for you to become the chief. It's time for you to do it. And you're like, now I have to really face this dilemma. So that was just really interesting. Two things that came up in terms of sometimes you can get too far above it. Like if there's a time in your writing process to go at 30,000 feet and really look at it, and there's times to go much, dig down much closer and get really, really specific, both emotionally, what is the dilemma? What would that refrain be in an I Want song? And sometimes it was funny. Sometimes when you're talking to directors or writers, as soon as you try to get down into that deep I Want, they start talking about the social issues or the incident, and you're like, oh, they don't want to talk about this, which means I'm going to keep going, well, that's great, but let's just go back to this. Like, let's just go back. And I had to do it to myself, because your brains do it. Your brains jump away from it sometimes. So I was trying to do that to myself this week, to go back, just get specific. It's not scary. Just look at one small thing, you know, bird by bird. So that was my week, craft wise, anyways, you know, human
Meg, life-wise. I think our, our struggles are so funny. Like, you're so comfortable in the 30,000 and I'm so happy in the details, right?
Right.
Like, for me, it's always like, zoom out, right? Big picture. And you're, I just think that's so funny the way we both approach things so differently.
Well, I think because I had, you know, whatever, 10 years training as a producer, and your job is to really see that big picture and help the creative get to their details. You can bring details. I don't know, Charlie, you're a producer. I mean, of course you can bring your own emotional details to something to illuminate, but you're really not supposed to, you know, it's their details you're supposed to get to. Yeah. What's your experience, Charlie, as a manager of that 30,000 foot view versus the kind of detail-y view when you're giving notes?
That's a good question, of course. And it's always a healthy struggle, I think, for writers as they figure this out. My view is, on a very basic level, you know, the writer has to connect with the story, you know, through and through. So what I want, you know, or might be interesting to me really isn't that relevant unless it's actually aiding and abetting the writer, right? So you can't force a perspective that's not there, right? It's got to feel real for them to emotionally connect with the characters and the story itself and stay invested and all those things, right? Like it's their work at the end of the day. You know, themes come in that 30,000 foot area. So I think there might be certain themes that appeal to you. And I would say to her, that's great. They should sort of drift around. But where it gets real is when you discuss a character, usually characters are pretty fallible, right? And that's what's interesting about them is like, can they work their way through this, right? Can they figure out what their want is? And then maybe you say, oh, that's not really what I need, right? And sort of distinguishing between those two. So I try as much as I can, you know, with writers to, you know, engage and ask questions, right? And try to see, sometimes just talking things through will lend to some clarity for them. And figuring out sort of, you know, where their story actually lies. So my view with them is to remember, like, fallible characters are interesting, right? And everyone's that way, and that's why you connect with the characters. So the themes and all that stuff, if it's too hoity-toity or too high up there, too esoteric or academic or whatever else it is, none of that stuff is going to resonate or ever mean anything to anybody unless they sort of connect to the characters. I'm not a big believer in likable characters. I think that's a Hollywoodism that is foolish. But I am a big believer in interesting characters. So if you want to see where a character ends up, you're going to go on the ride. Along that ride, you can touch on those themes that are interesting to you. You can go to that 30,000 foot place, right? And hopefully it doesn't feel like a slow chamber to your audience. Hopefully it just sort of washes over them as they're going on that journey with the character.
All right, we're going to ask you questions now. Some of them, we want to start a little bit basic because, again, a lot of our audience is emerging writers. So a couple of different people, including Stuart, asked, you know, what is the difference between a manager and an agent? Are there distinct differences in the relationship to the writer?
Sure. Yeah, I'll go through it, which is which I do, of course, from time to time. So first of all these answers are going to be generalities because there's no hard and fast rules in Hollywood. It's just the way it goes. And any given person can be the exception to the rule, and there are a lot of them. Having said that, the way I generally try to explain it is that agents cover the town, right? They know everything that's going on, and they have a wealth of information at their fingertips if they're at a well-run agency. And they all have different infrastructures and how they do that and everything else. And I think of managers as really covering the client, right? Knowing the client really well, knowing the client's strengths and weaknesses and what's going on with their family and their, you know, where they are emotionally or wherever else it might be. And in theory, if you have an agent and a manager, they're working well together, where the agent is bringing things up and bringing things to the fore, and the manager, knowing who the client is and what they're about, is helping them sort through those opportunities, right? Or figure out what's right, what's the right path, where will they succeed given their personality and the personalities of whatever the producer or studio executive might be on a given project. That answer sort of assumes that somebody's career is a little further along, right? That there's opportunities coming their way. at the, you know, at the onset of your career, frankly, as a writer, you are trying to get somebody to get invested in you, period, and get in the game, right? Have someone actually try to sell you, of course, be hired for something. So it's a little bit, at the beginning, it's a little bit more of a mishmash, honestly. You're just trying to be noticed and be noticed as a sort of a talented person. And often managers will get in first, right? They'll sort of recognize a voice and know they can't quite sell somebody right away, right? But they're going to develop them. And then maybe one day help them, you know, find an agent or whatever it might be, and get the team up and running. And in that scenario, the managers to me that are the most interesting, and it's the way I, when I take on clients, the way I approach it is the manager, I think more than anyone else, but again, it's a gross generalization, but more than anyone else has to really get your writing, right? They have to really appreciate it, right? And be interested in what you have to say and how you say it and what's unique about you. Because then they're all, if that's who they are, they're always going to be in your corner because they're going to want to see what they can do with that career. Sometimes there are people you'll come along with a script and the script's pretty good and they'll just think, oh, I can sell it. They're looking for the deal. And the problem is if the deal doesn't work out, right, then there's no follow-up on you, right? They're like, oh, okay, let me see if I sell this and make a little commission for myself and make my year a little bit better. But there's not that sort of thing of like building a career and taking this person from A to Z. Again, I'm going to sort of wander around. So, you know, the relationship with the manager is a little more intimate. But, great manager and agent actually work really nicely together. Right? They sort of, they kind of perform different roles and usually, sort of hand off nicely to each other when it's really working well. But it takes a little while to get to that place.
You were saying that, when you find that writer, you're like, okay, I want to develop this. Maybe they don't have anything to sell right now, but I love their voice. I love their point of view, what they're saying. Right. So, of course, lots of questions from both Erica and Louisa specifically asking about how do you find that and choose that talent? What makes a writer stand out? Is it queries? Is it recommendations? Is it just the work? So I guess there's two questions there. How does work get to a manager? How do they find them? And what makes a writer stand out?
Yeah, it's hard as a writer sort of coming in. You could sort of be making cold calls and sending emails, but generally speaking, is some form of connection somewhere along the way. Right, a personal connection somewhere along the way that gets a manager who's working in the business to actually read the script. And I wish I had an easier answer doing that. I mean, there are certainly contests, right, that people can enter and managers come through that. And there are, classes that people take. And sometimes people run those classes will have a certain amount of connections and make recommendations and try to help out those students. And the managers likewise are knocking on those doors looking for clients. So there's a number of sort of different ways to get there. From my perspective, what I look for when something does come across my desk is what I call voice. It's that something intrinsic in the writing that sort of captures you. I don't know, frankly, if it can always be learned, that it could be honed. I don't know if everybody can have it. There's a reason why some people are writers and some are not, and some are very, very successful writers, and others are doing well, but not quite, at the heights of others. And so voice for me it's when I connect with a character. And I usually can connect with a character in 10 or 15 pages. And if I don't hear that character's voice and don't, start to feel them, right? Then I generally speaking won't read a whole lot further. So, it's art, right? Everything is very subjective. What I connect with, somebody else may not, and vice versa. So just because one manager doesn't get it, or 10 managers don't get it, it doesn't mean that you won't find the one that does. And you got to just sort of keep plugging away.
Jeff, you had a question about this specifically. Do you want to jump in with your question about the query letters?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think what we read online often is like, as a new writer, if you've won contests or gotten good coverage on the Blacklist website, or maybe even shown up on a list, is the query letter a viable way to get a manager's attention. Just like cold sending a letter with a short bio, what you've written, and some information about maybe contests you've won in terms of getting recognized by a management company.
Yeah, it depends on the manager, frankly, and what's going on in their career and how busy they are and what they're looking for. So for instance, like my client list is pretty full right now. So it's very hard for, I don't carry a big client list, but for, because I do a lot of producing, I found sort of a number where I feel like, okay, I can handle these clients if everything goes sideways and my producing gig at the same time. And that's for me is my balance, but every manager is going to have that, that, you know, if they have a ton going on, they're probably not even paying attention to query letters, right? If things are a little bit quieter, then they might say, hey, you know, I'm going to give this a read. It's not a bad idea to try to, if it's just a cold email in, to try to figure out their assistant's email as well. So, you know, occasionally something will come in and I'll say, oh, it looks kind of interesting, you know, and then we usually send out a letter, you know, from a lawyer, which, you know, for the submission, right? Because the world is so litigious nowadays, and okay, you admit that you're sending this to us, and you know, there's a lot of that, you know, sort of going on. So make sure there's no issues there, but you just never know when you'll get a little bit lucky with that. So I think it's definitely worthwhile. And it's just catching someone in the right moment.
So like, as a follow-up to that, are there like mistakes with querying? I mean, like there's always that like delicate balance between like being persistent and being seen, but not being annoying. Like I was an intern and I've seen executives roll their eyes at that writer who sent 6 queries in 1 week type of thing. So I don't know if you can speak to that delicate balance between getting someone's attention and putting yourself out there, but not being that person.
I'm not going to have a great answer there because, again, I think everyone's a little bit different the way it's received. You can definitely look. We're in a business of sales, right? And I suppose most businesses are that way, but ours very distinctly. And you know, there are some people who respond to a hard sale and some people who don't. I don't respond to the hard sale, right? And I can, you know, when the fluff is coming away, I can see it, and I generally don't dig it. So if somebody is, if I get that email says so-and-so is reading it and they're about to do something, but I thought I would get it, then I'm like, oh, good luck with the other thing. Great. Sounds great. You know, and I go that way, right? I mean, you know, when you're being positioned. So, you know, it's not everyone obviously approaches the same way as me, but I think there is a tipping point with people, right? And you have to understand that every time you send a script to somebody and you really want them to read it, whether it's this representation, but also for friends or people who are in the business who can be helpful, is it's a couple hours out of their day, right? If they're really going to read a script, particularly obviously if it's a feature, a little less if it's a, like a TV pilot. So there was a stage of my life where my family, right, would send me like 4 scripts to read, right? And say, hey, can you read? And I'd get them like every week from like a friend of theirs. And I'm like, hey, just, you know, like this is my Saturday. I've got 3 children, but you're asking me to put in 8 hours of extra work, right, for your friends. I don't ask you to do that for my friends, right? And was it until I sort of put it in that frame of reference for them, like, hey, I've got 3 little kids who I'd like to take to the soccer game and, you know, take to the park or do whatever else, but you're making requests of me where I either have to be skipping dinners or doing this stuff. And so I just said, you know, if you're going to make a request, like, you know, don't be just throwing things at the wall, right? Like, you know, our time is precious. And you just have to sort of be aware of that.
So when you are considering clients, are there specific contests that you notice, or like how many scripts would you expect somebody to have when they come to you in terms of a client being ready to be repped?
So that's a great question. I don't track the contest. It's not sort of where my career is at the moment. I think if you are, this is actually something to keep in mind if you are somebody who is getting represented, is I always say that, you know, if you're a person who's getting in, you want the person whose career is not the top yet, right? You don't want the top guy because, frankly, they're in the decision-making stage of their career with most of their clients. They're not building people. You want somebody who is, you know, younger in their career, not necessarily younger of age, but younger in their career as representative, who's still building their list and you know, is still trying to sort of sell and get out there and get clients and all that stuff. So it kind of, it's a different kind of hungry that's going on there. All right, hold on, Lauren, what was the original question? I got to get back to that.
Oh, well, are there contests? But you said you don't, you're not. So you answered that one. And then I guess the second part of that with two different questions is a person who is ready to be rep, right? Okay. So we talk a lot about on the show, like you need scripts.
You do. You do. And it's always easier. I like to see a couple of scripts, right? Because there are flashes in the pan where they write something great and they just don't have something else. And there's two parts of that. When you try to sell someone, like your script is your portfolio, right? But it's only one piece. So if someone goes, oh, I'm looking for somebody, you know, who's doing things like this, I'm like, oh, I've got a great writer who can do thrillers, and I can send them two or three thrillers, right? So they can go, oh yeah, this person kind of nails it again and then again and again. That's very comfortable for them, right? To then say, okay, I want to meet with that person or sell that person to my boss as a viable entity. If it's just one script, that's harder. Right? Because anybody, you know, you hire a contractor, you don't want to see, you know, that one set of cabinets they built. You might want to see a couple of different examples, right? And likewise, for executives in town, producers and executives in town, a couple of scripts are good, and a couple of scripts within the same genre in particular are good. There's always a lot of talk about sort of branding and things like that. I don't entirely buy that, but I will say that especially when you're making your way in, if you can be writing within a genre or you know, if you're an action writer and an action thriller and maybe a romantic action, whatever, it's all sort of in the same world, then people have a pretty good feeling for what they're getting if they're going to hire you or take you on as a client, right? And if you're taking them on as a client, you're like, hey, I can sell them in this way, right? And obviously, if they're hiring you and paying you, right, they have a good idea of what you can bring to the package. So what's the hardest is somebody comes in and goes, oh, I have an action movie, and then I have a romantic comedy, and then I wrote, you know, a half hour thriller because I want to do something totally new. I'm like, well, that's not helpful. Like, and you might be great, but it's very hard. And somebody goes, okay, so let me read them. Then, well, what else can I read of theirs? And I send them something completely different genre. They're trying to build a comfort zone with you. It's hard to do if you're a little bit all over the place. As your career grows, if you're successful, right, and you, let's just say you start, since it was my initial example, as a sort of a thriller or action writer, and then, you know, and then you sort of, you know, you're working for a while, and then you slide into more of a dramatic spot, and then maybe romantic. So then suddenly you can kind of build out your portfolio and be working in different genres successfully. But I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. There are lots of writers who can really write beautifully in different genres. But particularly at the outset of a career, letting people know what they have to work with. And again, being able to sell it uphill, you know, sell it, you know, within their own company or to their boss, right? It's important to think in those terms.
As a personal story to support exactly what you're saying, I had to look for a new manager. My manager went back to producing. So I was having lots of manager meetings, and, you know, I have a YA feature. I had a 1 hour. I had, you know, I had a whole bunch of different stuff, but nothing was the same. And I met with great managers, and people were like, we like your writing. We like you, but we don't know what to do with you. And, you know, what do you want to do? And I said, you know, half hour dark comedy. And they're like, well, you don't have any of those. So like the runway is too big to get you where you want to go. Cause I've been hustling so hard and working and generating material that I wasn't focused. So I had to go write one. Right. And I mean, before that though, I found a manager who was willing to, who could see the potential of that in my work. And then he was like, great, let's do that. But it really was hard to hear, right? You like my writing, you like me, I like you, but you don't know what to do with me. Right. I felt like I wasn't bringing as much as I could to the manager relationship, right? Because I know it's about selling and how to sell me. Like, I know I can do it. They know I can do it. But like, how do we prove that to a potential buyer, to an exec? And so that was a really good lesson for me. Humbling, of course, but also like, right, I have to always be doing this, and I have to be doing what it is I want to be doing.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
I'm focusing on that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Jeff, one more question from Jeff before we move into actually working with a manager and the producer questions. But there's one last question from Jeff about this acquiring a manager subject.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Hollywood in general is changing so quickly. I feel like so many writers, it used to be only on the page where you could kind of see who they were and what their voice was. But a lot of writers are shooting things now. People are shooting their own web series, pilots, and even features. You know, they're like the micro budget features, a new kind of medium for emerging writers and maybe writer directors. But do you take those seriously? Like, would you ever consider acquiring a client if they produced a feature or a short, and like, let's say that feature short sells or performs well at a festival, like what would the benchmarks for self-generated material like that be in terms of manager interest?
It's a really, I don't have a good answer. It's a really tricky question, right? Because the vast majority of Hollywood, I'll say, still works in a fairly conventional formula, right? Which is there are people who write and there are people who direct and people who produce and people who edit, and you take up one of those positions for them. So again, this is all like gets to how can they sell you, right? In this space. So if you are kind of a do everything person, or you've made this thing, but you don't actually have a script that you ever wrote, or you have sort of a script, and even if the movie is great, you know, or you know, it's, you know, maybe well directed, but so markety, it's hard for people to take the leap. I think as a director in particular, if you're making small things and something like that, some people will see it, right? I mean, if you get a production up on its feet, that's probably the easiest math for someone to do in terms of at least representing you. But there is, it's not necessarily fair, but it's, you know, I definitely dealt with a friend, yeah, it was actually a friend years ago who was like, well, look, I can budget, you know, and he had done it. Like, he worked basically as a line producer, a director, and as a writer. And yet no one would engage with him because they weren't quite sure what he did really well. He didn't really have a script, and his directing stuff was good, but it wasn't great purely as a director. He's like, well, I want to do it all. And just no one knew how to handle him. The business is probably changing, frankly, in a way, and that those opportunities might get more and more interesting because, you know, the people who can figure out how to go do things at a small budget level, there's going to be certain, you know, buyers and financiers that might be willing to make those leaps. And there's a whole economy, you know, in terms of producing material that I don't participate in, right? People have their YouTube channels and, you know, putting content on there and whatever else. Like, that's a great world. And I think there can be a lot of people coming up through there and doing things. And that's a lot of what my kids watch, but it's not the day-to-day of sort of my life. So I might be, just not enough in that world to give a super intelligent answer. But in terms of what I'll call sort of formulaic Hollywood, they kind of like to know what you do and be able to sort of track it.
That makes sense.
Multi-hyphenate with some of those micro budget things early. It's just hard for them to sort of wrap their heads around how do I go sell this person exactly for a much bigger expensive production.
As a quick follow-up, and that's a great answer. I really appreciate it. Like the candor. Would you ever, like, if a writer were to, would you rather have them send you material, or if they had shot something they had written, would you rather watch it? I you're a lit manager, so that's very specifically on the page, I guess.
I respond to the material on the page, you know, by and large. If somebody wants to be a director, obviously, yeah, the shooting part is, you know, that's obviously important. But I usually start on the page. That's sort of my preference.
So once somebody is working with you and they're in your stable as a manager, and this might, you know, this question kind of spans all the way back to when you started too, right? So you got different, like you said, different, you were looking for different kinds of people and gathering your stable. What are the relationships that you've had with clients that have been fulfilling for you and successful? And then, or what did writers do that didn't really help you, right? Like, you know, well, like what does a writer bring to it in terms of that relationship, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's always the trickiest thing I sort of bump into when I'm working with people at the beginning of their careers, because everyone wants to be a working writer. The writers that do well, I can say unequivocally, are the ones who will either love it or can't avoid it. Right. So it's either they love to write or it's a cathartic process, whatever it is, right? It just they have to do it to stay sane and happy on some level. And the ones who really write because of what they are interested in, as much as possible, it might make a slightly seem like a longer road, but those writers tend to do the best. The writers that are the trickiest ones to deal with are the ones who are talented, like, look, I really need a sale. I need to do this. What's selling right now? Those writers are, you know, their voices get diminished quickly. They end up sort of chasing a deal, like usually a quick deal, which I understand because that's the world and they want their financial situation to change. But in chasing a deal, often they diminish their own voice. They lose their voice a little bit. And the other thing too is they're not writing either a spec script or putting something down that would be helpful to actually selling them. So sometimes writers are like, well, I just want to go and meet on something and pitch it wherever else because I feel like it can sell and these type of things are selling. And then they'll go and do that and they'll kind of chase it for 4 or 5 or 6 months and, you know, and it won't work out. And then that time has gone by and they haven't added anything to their portfolio. And whatever they were initially interested in terms of writing for something from their, you know, from their heart, from their soul, whatever interest it was, that has not found its way on the page. And sometimes the process, I think, gets a little bit corrupted. You know, writers who start to chase things because they're selling or self-censoring, that happens a lot, actually, self-censoring with writers. If I go this, you know, that usually backfires.
And, do you think that comes from a place of fear? Of desperation, of that urgency?
It is. It's all those things. It's very human, right? I mean, it's to be a writer, you have to, it's a lonely grind, right? And it's, and I think this podcast, I'm sure success and for others, you know, there are a lot of sort of essentially support groups with it. It's like, it's hard. It's hard. And so A, it's hard emotionally, I think, for people. And then B, yeah, like, you know, you're going to go do it. And people generally speaking need to earn a living, so it's you can see how things can go sideways for someone, I'll just put it that way. It's a delicate balance to try to sort of advise them and be responsive to, you know, their needs and their family needs, and trying to, you know, either find the balance or pick your spots, however you want to say it. If there's one great theme I would pass on from my experiences, there's no right way, right? And I can give a lot of examples, and Meg knows this. Sometimes we're discussing what do you work on. And, you know, I can say, here's what's happening, but that's just me hedging a bet. Like, hey, this is what I see happening the most, right? But I will say that my favorite thing when I read something is something that I don't see coming at all, right? And I'm like, oh, this is magical. And this is great. And I can sell this because it doesn't conform to anything, but it's awesome, right? And no one would say they were looking for, you know, whatever this is. And yet that's the most unique thing with the strongest voice that is the most compelling. And those are, you know, those things usually find their way into the marketplace and do well.
I have a question sort of as a piece of that. Can we talk for a minute about OWA's open writing assignments? Like what you were talking about, you know, I've done them and then I end up spending just a shit ton of time on them, you know, and I get myself excited and I get in it. And I find my theme. And then, you know, there's one I worked on for a while. And then, like, I don't know, the director went and did something else. That was in October, you know, like I never even got to pitch. And part of it feels like I'm glad I did it because I got to dig in and learn more about my process. But then also it's like, I feel like I wasted my time. I could have been doing something else. So how do you work with your clients in terms of finding that balance?
You kind of just answered it right yourself, which is you gain something, right? You start to understand your process in a different way from having to go through the struggles with it. That is invaluable. And remind me to come back to that later, because it's instructive, at least I think from a representative point of view, when you're trying to get your people working and actually trying to build a career versus just get them, you know, a paycheck, frankly. OWA is more in the feature world. You know, it does exist in TV with some intellectual property or something else that people have. But it's a project that's usually down the road a little bit. So it's got some pieces around it. It might have a director attached. It might be a previous draft or two or three. The appeal of that is usually people are ready to spend money because they've already spent money. Nobody likes to waste money. So if you're down the road, right, they're inclined to hire someone, and move a project forward. So if you get in and you're one of six or seven people who meet on things, you're kind of in a very specific lottery, right? And that job might come your way, which is great. So it's very different from writing a script on spec and really just not quite knowing where that's going to end up, right? You have the rails are a little tighter in terms of, you know, where you're going with an OWA. The flip side about them is they are, those pieces that are around them that make attractive are also tricky, right? Because you had a director who disappeared. You might have a producer on it who has really strong feelings about it based on, you know, some previous thing. You might have two producers on it who do not agree about the path. You might have a producer and a studio executive who also are on coming from it from you know, different ends. You might have a producer who's been around for 30 years on it, a studio executive who really wants nothing to do with it, but is just fostering a relationship because their boss told them to, and they're not really invested in, they're just shying it on to keep their job, right? In the meantime, they're trying to get something else going. So there's just a lot of factors, and that's when, you know, having an agent or manager is in theory helpful, because they're gonna try to sort through what's the BS and what's real, right? And guide you on that process. Okay, this one's legit and this one's real. This one's sort of fraught with danger. And it should just be an open conversation, you know, with you about those things. And as always, it's Hollywood, right? So sometimes for all the research and thoughts and you know, best intentions you have, it still goes sideways. And then sometimes you'll say, you know, I definitely said to clients, like, this has a lot of pieces around it that I don't like. And the client will say, but I love the project. I'm like, well, you got to go for it then. And then it'll go great. It'll go beautifully. And all the pieces that I thought were problematic will come together and work in a nice way. So it goes both ways, without a doubt. I would say that you learning about your process, all that is just, it's just knowledge and experience that finds its way into the next thing that you do. Right, you'll recognize, you know, where the guardrails are faster, you know, who you have to maybe massage a little bit as a writer, that you might not be able to blow one thing up or another. It's just, and that's all born from experience. And that's sort of, I'm going to go full circle and say the thing I remind me of, I'll just sort of say this, that sometimes the greatest disservice you can do to a young writer who's written one script or another script but doesn't know their process well is to put them on a high profile project. And everyone likes that sexy new thing that comes along where they go, oh, this person's great and they're new, and everyone, like, you know, executives like to build their careers. Oh, I'm gonna hire this guy, and then they're gonna be my guy or woman or whatever it is, right? And my career is gonna rise with them. But if a writer doesn't understand their process in particular, then they flail in that scenario, right? They're getting notes from nine different sides. They don't know who's to pay attention to, who's not. They get, you know, and they can lose confidence and they can lose a reputation really quickly. So I'm always super cautious of putting a writer in a position to work too quickly if they don't understand their process and they haven't struggled a fair amount. I think they can sort of stumble onto a bad road, and it can be, you know, it can really sort of set them back quite a bit. I like the writers who have struggled and have learned and have honed a voice and are willing to fight. And then when they get in the middle of it, right, they've been in it before in a different way, but they've been in it before and they can find their way through it usually.
Yeah, I say sometimes to the emerging writers listening, there's a reason you're having to write all these drafts, all these different scripts, because you have to get, there's other tools you're learning so that when you hit the big time, you can do it. Like, yeah. I could never have done Pixar if I hadn't done all the other things I did to even get there. So I love to hear that you agree and that what I'm saying is good advice.
It is. And you know, we're sort of talking about, like, you know, a little bit like some of the difficulties of being in the business, because it is tricky. But I will say this too, is, you know, for writers in particular, you can make things from whole cloth, and writers get paid in this town whether something gets made or not, right? Directors and actors can't say that. So it is a hard job. It's a really wonderful job as well. It can be rewarding, and, you know, it's got a lot of things going for it that other, you know, positions in the town do not. So that should be reassuring, I hope, to people who are sort of out there getting it, is that it's, you know, I always think it's a privilege to work in our business, and open the writers.
There's something really important. You were saying too, that there are so many factors around any project that not getting a project doesn't mean, what did I do wrong? It can sometimes, right? You should always be willing to investigate your process and talk to the people that you trust about what your involvement is in it not working for you. But there are so many other factors and people involved with different motivations that if you don't get something, it just means you didn't get it. It doesn't mean you're a crappy writer, you fucked up somehow, or, you know, that sometimes it just means it just wasn't going to work out.
Yeah.
You know, and that you shouldn't let that tank you. You have your moment of mourning and you move on.
Yeah. I think that's right. And I think it's an important point to bring up, which is that, you know, there's a lot of moving parts everywhere. And all you can do is you put your best foot forward. If it works out, great. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And it's a talent, because it's art, you know, particularly if you're further along the way and you've pitched or written something, it's always close to your heart. So it's hard not to take it personally. It's really, really hard not to take it personally. And you've just got to find a way to sort of, you know, divorce yourself a little bit from those personal moments. It's hard. There's no two ways about it.
It is. And it never gets easier. I wanted to, before we wrap up, to be sure to get to a question we had come in. At least one of the questions about your producing, Andrea, who it sounds like from her question, she is already repped and she's not an emerging writer, but she had a specific question about when you've got a show like This Is Us that has many seasons, and maybe it's had back in the day when it had one and it's moving into a second or third. If a writer admires a show, is there any value in getting their reps to see, is that room going to change? Is there opportunity there? Do those rooms tend to change? Do they not? Like, how, in terms of a show that's ongoing, what are those rooms like, and how can a writer who's maybe not in it get in it, or no?
Yeah, they absolutely can. And those rooms do change. I mean, again, you know, every show is different. So some are very, you know, bring back the same group quite often, but usually there's a, you know, look, again, people's careers are moving up. So somebody who is kind of moving up the chain of that show might go sell their own show, and then suddenly positions open up, or they might be asked to come take over, and they're sort of, you know, moving up the ladder. So there is constant turnover in rooms for TV shows. And yeah, you can ask your reps and say, is there something to help there? And they will press and they will try to find. Of course, the most coveted shows, right, are the hardest ones to get into, you know, for obvious reasons. I mean, I've had friends and writers say to me, I'll work on Succession for free, right? They're like, I love that show. I'll go, can you get me in there for free? I'm like, just so you know, you're like the 30th person who said that to me this week. You know, like, they're like, yeah, that's great. I mean, that's the beauty of being an artist and really appreciating what somebody else is doing and want to contribute to it. But your representatives can get you in there. And sometimes, you know, again, it's all sort of relation. There's a lot of relationships in this business. So if they happen to know the right person in the right moment, right, that can open up to you.
I would think you'd want to get in there to make the general, so that when that person does their next show, they're somebody you think of, right? Because Succession, who the hell is going to let you write a Succession? But he's such a genius. You know, he's got other shows going. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah. Which pool do you want to swim in, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So, and, you know, another thing just for people to keep in mind as they get into the business, and Meg, you've heard me say this a fair amount probably, is there are no straight lines, right? So there's nothing... No job leads to this next job, but everything does tend to add up eventually, right? So you work on some show with some staff, and that staff, you know, and you enjoy working with them, you're a nice person in the room, you're talented, hopefully all those things are true. Everyone's going to go and do different things. And they go, you know what, that person was really great. And then they pull you into that one, and you've moved up a level. And it just, it's a little bit of a club, right? And people who are talented and nice in that club, they tend to, you know, work their way up in the world. And that's, I think that's a nice thing. Yeah, everyone has to pay their dues, for the record. But you pay them, you get in, you do good work, you tend to get rewarded.
So my last question, and the last question for you as a producer, and then we're going to wrap up, is so you have a client, they want to take a show out, and you're going to be the producer on it. Mm-hmm. Or so maybe they're not a client, because of course that could be happening too. When do you think, yeah, this show can go, or I need to produce it. Like for you, what shows do you like as a producer? What do you feel get excited about?
Yeah, that's a, I never have a great answer to this because I always run towards characters that are remarkably flawed and shouldn't succeed, but still manage to succeed. So it's not a genre-based answer. It's not like, you know, I like dramas or half hours or action or whatever else. I just kind of like damaged people, right? And I don't know why that is. So, you know, but I think it's interesting, right? I mean, if this, if your lead character slash knucklehead can work your way through something, right? Like that's, you know, in watching their particular path to do it, that's always interesting to me. The business has changed a fair amount the last couple of years. There's a lot. Before, it used to be very pitch centric. You could take a pitch out and, you know, and then you get a script order and you get a pilot order and then you get a series order. You know, lately I've been taking things out where the writer has written the pilot script and has the pitch for the series behind it. And it's been, you know, series orders sort of happening. So, you know, if you can pitch well in either one of those scenarios and understand what it means to pitch well in TV in particular, you know, you can go, you know, I'll take somebody in lots of different scenarios to go and do it. And sometimes I get attachments and sometimes I nod. And it's just, you know, each one is a little bit different. But if it's compelling and it can happen in 20 minutes and you can talk about your world that you're interested in, your characters, and how they are going to interact with each other to explore what the space that you're interested in, and give a couple of examples of what some shows might look like, you can tell a show.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Charlie. We always end asking the same three questions to every guest, so we're going to ask you now. What brings you the most joy about your job? Producer or manager, either?
Both. Yeah, they're both to me, they're very similar. It's the joy of sort of working with somebody, and frankly, I think most of my stuff is as a facilitator, and seeing somebody who have a creative vision be able to pull that off largely the way they want to, right? That is a great joy for me. It's hard in this business to do that, but the highs are really high. And it's, you know, I feel like it's a privilege to work in a business. And if I can be part of that process and get a project there and a person there, it's really rewarding.
That's awesome. All right. So second question is, what pisses you off about your job?
Oh, well, you know, the hardest part about my job, I'll just say it this way, is that because it's art, no one is right. Right. And so in my mind, you know, somebody who really shouldn't have an opinion can have an opinion and really dictate the way something goes at a given moment. And that can be remarkably frustrating. But over the years, I've gotten a little better about how to handle those things and how to steer around them and things like that. But, you know, sometimes you're beholden to somebody in the works who's making things harder than they need to be.
So true.
Right, and our last question, Jeff, you want to ask?
Yeah, Charlie, if you could be remembered for one thing about your job, or that could be, you know, one amazing piece that your client has had produced or a show that you've had produced, what would that be?
I have no idea. I have no idea. When I discover, I will let you know. I don't think in those terms. My brain can even go places in those terms, but maybe one day.
I'm going to ask you.
When I figure it out, I'll come back on.
Okay, good.
Meg, let us know.
I can hold you to that. I can hold you to that. Charlie, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Oh, we're both thanking you at the same time. Look at that. We're in sync.
No, well, yeah. Lots of fun. I think it's great what you guys do here. I'm glad you're doing it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks so much to Charlie for coming onto our show.
And thank you to all of you for tuning in. If you haven't yet, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/thescreenwritinglife. Also, please drop us a review on Apple Podcasts.
And check out our Patreon. And remember, you are not alone. And keep writing.
Thanks for tuning in to The Screenwriting Life. We love our community and we want to get to know you even better. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/thescreenwritinglife or email us at thescreenwritinglife@gmail.com to have your question considered for the show. You can also suggest topics by emailing us there. Also, we'd love for you to drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. Even if we don't read your review on air, trust me, we have read it, and not only does it mean the world to us, but it helps other people find the show. We've always been driven by mission and mentorship, and reviewing our show helps expand that mission. And of course, until next Sunday, happy writing.